in the beginning of my professional career, I was happy to just be able to play. Like, to me, it wasn't about money. It was just like, I get to do this as a job and it's great that I get paid, but I'm not that concerned about the money. And that was me being naive and also young and fresh out of college. So I think that as I became more experienced, you begin to realize how drastic it was and just that it was discriminatory, you know, that this isn't right. There's an issue here and we need to fix it and we need to be part of fixing it. And if we don't do that, no one else is going to do that.
This is Sweat the Details, a collaboration with Under Armour and iHeartRadio, a sports and training podcast made for women by women that puts our success and challenges at the front and center. I'm Monica Jones. I'm a fitness coach, boxer, business owner, and UA athlete.
And I'm Meg Boggs. I'm a powerlifter, author, body positivity advocate, and mother. Every episode, Monica and I will talk to athletes, trainers, and experts and learn more about how the body and mind work together in training and competition.
Meg, get ready because today...
I'm ready.
Yes, we are talking with U.S. soccer star Kelly O'Hara. She's an Olympic gold and bronze medalist and a two-time FIFA World Cup champion. What a resume.
Right? I mean, incredible. She is just... she's so impressive. And like many legendary athletes, Kelly fell in love with soccer at a very young age and eventually found her way playing D1 soccer at Stanford. And then with her first professional soccer team, FC Gold Pride. She currently plays with the Washington Spirit and the United States Women's National Soccer Team.
Yes, but pursuing soccer professionally hasn't been an easy path, especially due to disparities in working conditions and wages between men and women soccer players in the U.S.
Of course, Kelly and her teammates have been raising their voices to achieve equality in the sport. I'm looking forward to hearing more about their fight and how we can all help to uplift women's sports across the board.
Yes, obviously we've had, you know, multiple conversations with powerful women on this show, but to really bring it home with Kelly and the action that she and her teammates and other women in the sport of soccer are taking is inspiring. Mm-hmm. They're getting together and really taking action. So far as going into court and seeing through lawsuits, that right there, while being a professional athlete and performing your best, is something that I can't even fathom, but I'm so thankful for.
Yeah. I mean, let's be real. If women's sports actually received that same type of visibility and support as men's sports, people would be watching. It's that simple. This assumption that there's a lack of interest when there's really never even been a solid attempt to give women's sports an equal amount of pay and an equal amount of support, it's just wild to me. It's just mind-blowing, but deep breaths.
Yeah, it's a vicious cycle and it is going to be a long climb, but I'm very, very excited that this conversation can reach more ears and that we can continue to push this conversation further and continue to take action.
Before we get to the interview, I want to explain some acronyms that you'll hear Kelly use when talking about equal pay. NWSLPA is short for the National Women's Soccer League Players Association, which is the union representing NWSL players. These players play for soccer clubs and may or may not be in the national team.
Yes, we are back at it again with the letters. Another union is the USWNTPA, the U.S. Women's National Team Players Association, which represents national team players. These players represent the U.S. in international competitions, such as the World Cup and the Olympics, and may or may not be NWSL players.
You'll also hear the term CBA, which means collective bargaining agreements. This is a written legal contract between an employer and a union representing the employees.
So I feel like we literally just passed the bar exam.
Exactly.
And I know these acronyms are hard to remember, but we know the main idea is that these two unions are helping women soccer players achieve better pay and working conditions by negotiating better contracts for them.
Absolutely. Mon, what do you say we get to our conversation with the incredible Kelly O'Hara?
Let's get it.
What's up, Fit Fam? I'm literally sweating right now with excitement because we are here, right? I mean, I'm like, woo! Because we're sitting here with two-time FIFA World Cup champion and Olympic gold medalist Kelly O'Hara. And I know I speak for everyone here and listening that we are incredibly excited to have you here on Sweat the Details. How are you, Kelly?
I'm doing great. And I also agree. It's funny how, like, right before you're supposed to start, It's like you get a little sweat going. It's like a little bit of nerves or something.
It's real.
But it's, yeah, it's, which is so funny. It definitely happens to me. So I feel you on that.
We had to let these armpits free today because I was.
You came with the cutoff.
We kept it cool for the pre-interview, but now I'm losing it. All right.
Okay. I know. I'm already sweating. I'm like, what is happening? Well, I just want to dive right in and start from the beginning. Can you tell us about your journey as an athlete? What role did sports play in your life growing up? And how did you first get into soccer?
Oh, man. I think sports played a huge role in my life. I started playing soccer when I was 4. My parents were like, you're going to go play in Muppet Soccer in Peachtree City, Georgia. And that was the first organized sporting event or practice, I guess, I did as a kid, which is kind of fitting that it ended up being the one that I have progressed in and obviously become a professional in and taken it the farthest. So, started when I was 4, and I did tons of sports growing up. You name it, I probably tried it. I just like to be outside. I like to play. I like to compete even at a very early age. And eventually, soccer was the one that became the number one. But up until I was probably 14 or 15, I did a ton of different sports. And I do think that shaped me as a kid, teenager, and now as a person. And I credit my parents because they're both very athletic, but they also knew the benefit and the importance of going out and playing and being active and the things that you can learn from sports and all that stuff. So I'm very thankful that they were just like, try whatever, do whatever.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Did you always want to be a professional soccer player, or how did you realize that was the career you wanted to take?
Yeah.
Oh gosh. No, I definitely, when I was in elementary school, I think I wanted to be a librarian.
Sick.
Oh.
And I like thought about, yes. I liked organizing things, like the Dewey Decimal System. I was like, this would be lit to be able to do this, you know, for the rest of my life. No, I'm really glad I didn't, but shout out to all the librarians out there. I didn't even think about being a professional soccer player until probably watching the 99 World Cup and seeing the women win that. But even still, I didn't love soccer as a kid. I really enjoyed it. It was one of my favorite sports, but I wasn't obsessed with it like I have become later on in life. So yeah, I think until I was in college even, and there became a professional league that I could play in, that it wasn't until then that I was like, oh, this is a possibility that I could be a professional athlete in the sense of playing in a league. You know, my goal was always to play on the national team at the highest level, to win World Cups, to win Olympics, and to be a professional athlete in that sense. But yeah, I think it's really, it didn't happen until I had the ability to even think like, oh, I could play in a league here in the US and be a professional athlete day in and day out.
Oh, wow. So like it wasn't until really later on. You played, you said at 4, but you had probably years and years and years of playing soccer before it really hit you that this was something that was a possibility?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I almost quit soccer when I was 13 because I was just like, my schedule is too busy. I don't have time for this. You know, it's taking up too much of my time, being probably a little diva like that. But again, once I saw the 99 World Cup, I think I was like, oh, I want to play on the national team. Like if that's the highest level you can get to, I want to be the best and I want to get to that level. But the idea of being a professional and what that meant or what that would end up meaning, I don't really think started to sink into my head until probably late in high school, maybe college.
Okay. Wow. So you went to your first FIFA Women's World Cup in 2011, and then the following year you made it to the Olympics, which is wow. Can you tell us more about those experiences? Like, how was the experience of representing your country at a high level international competition?
Yeah. So, I mean, like I said, I think that seeing the 99 World Cup made me think, oh, I want to play on that team and I want to play for the USA and I want to play soccer. But even before then, 1996 Olympics, it was held in Atlanta, which I'm a Georgia girl. I grew up there. And funny enough, my parents didn't take me to any of the events. I just watched them on TV. But I remember that was the first time I really watched, I think, sports on television, or that I can remember. And in particular, watched women compete. And it wasn't even the soccer team. It was the gymnastics team that I remember watching and just being in awe of and inspired by and looking at them and being like, I want to do that one day. And as I got older and kind of went through the ranks in the youth national team system with soccer, I think that's when I really started to think, oh, I could maybe one day go to a World Cup, go to an Olympics. And that was the goal. But to then be able to do it was extremely special. And it's cliched to say, but a dream come true. You know, that was what I thought about as a kid.
exactly.
Growing up. And so, yeah, I mean, it's hard to describe because it is very special. And I think back then I was more so like enamored with the idea. I was like, oh, I'm here. I get to do this. This is so cool. I'm just part of it, you know, like, and didn't fully, which is a good thing, take on the weight of the expectation of winning and that sort of thing. It's interesting that I won a gold medal first. And that was truly like a childhood dream, being an Olympian and being a gold medalist. But then to later go on and win World Cups, they're very different, but again, incredible in their own right. And very thankful I've been able to be a part of so many and so many successful tournaments.
It's a huge, huge platform and like a huge amount of coverage. So what are some lessons that you got from your first international competitions that you now apply to your games? Like, we see on the media how teams will go overseas and they'll have to deal with time change. They'll have to deal with practicing at a completely different time. Like, what are some lessons that you got from those competitions?
So the World Cup, and the coach basically sat me down before and said, you're not going to see the field. You're there to practice and support and be a cheerleader. And I was like, whatever you need, I got you. No problem. But I ended up getting subbed into the third group stage game. We were playing Sweden and we were losing. I got subbed in the last 15 minutes. And I still remember our strength and conditioning coach coming down, Dawn Scott. She comes down and her job was to tell who was subbing in to go warm up. And she walks down the bench and she gets to me and she stops and she's like, go warm up. And that means you're probably going to go in. There's a chance you're going to go in. And I remember being like, are you sure you didn't pick the wrong person? Like, you definitely do not want me going in this game. Like, you need to go check with the coaches and make sure I'm the one they want going in the game. Well, they wanted me to go in, and I ended up going in and played probably the worst soccer I've ever played in my life. I didn't do anything right. It wasn't good. And we lost. And thankfully, we were already through, but still, we went through a second, which set us up to play Brazil, which it just was a harder draw. And I felt personally responsible for coming in and not doing well. And I remember after the game, I actually got pulled for drug testing. And so the way it works, you go to drug testing, everybody showers, leaves. You do your drug testing, you go back in a separate van because everybody's already gone home because it takes a couple hours. But before we left, I went back up to the field because it was quiet. The lights were off. No one was there. The stadium was empty. And I remember standing at the top of the steps, right as you are about to enter the pitch, and just kind of looking out and taking in that moment and telling myself, this is a soccer field, like any other soccer field you played on. Yes, it's in front of millions of people, you know, on TV and fans in the stadium, all this stuff. There's a lot of factors that are different. But at the end of the day, what you're going to do on this field or what you were supposed to do on this field is what you've done every single time. And to remember that, and you've been doing it for so long. And no matter how big the situation or the game presents itself as, it's just soccer. And you've been there before. So don't make the same mistake again and getting too caught up in all the hype and the pressure and the moment. And that was something that changed how I approached the rest of my career. And I'm really thankful that I basically fell flat on my face and had the opportunity to take a step back and figure out how I can make sure it didn't happen again. So I think in all of that, I would say my biggest thing is like, When you're training for something, and it's not even sports, it's anything. It's a test. It's you're about to give a presentation in business. Like, you've done it before. You can do it again. And there might be different factors that make the situation or the moment feel very elevated. But at the end of the day, stick to what you know and know that you put in the work to do what you need to do to be successful. So that was a long story to say that. Yeah, we needed that build up.
I needed to hear a player of your caliber say it was not good because
my direct quote was, that was the biggest epic fail of my life. And I said it to a teammate, and if she ever listened to this, she would laugh. But that was how I saw it. It'd be like that sometimes, sadly.
I feel like everyone listening probably is like, you're speaking directly to me. I needed to hear this right now, you know?
Yeah.
And you say it's an epic fail, but you know, the way that you twisted it into being this pivotal moment for you sounds like maybe it wasn't such an epic fail.
I mean, I'm thankful. Yeah. I'm thankful it happened when it did. And thankfully, you know, like we were still moving through. It wasn't that big of a deal in terms of the grand scheme of things.
But for you personally, I'm sure it was huge.
Oh my God, I thought my career was over. And truthfully, the coach, I find out later, was like planning on not ever calling me back in after that.
Really?
But gave me another chance, and thank God, and you know, the rest is history. But
it was
right on the edge of just really messing it all up. So.
Oh man. So I know you did soccer in college at Stanford and then played professionally in multiple teams across the country, including FC Gold Pride, and your current team is Washington Spirit. You've also played different positions. How has your training regime changed as you've gotten more experience and changed teams?
Oh, man. It's changed a lot. I feel like that has been something that I am thankful I've had the ability to pivot and change and find different things and continually be looking at places where my game can get better, my training can get better or different, strength and conditioning, nutrition, sleep, recovery. Like there's so many things throughout my career that I just continually tweak because in my mind, we're at the top of our game as professional athletes. So this idea of aggregation of marginal gains of, can I get 1% better in each area? That's going to give me a 10% gain on the rest of my competition or on my current self. So the way I would say in my career is that I've just constantly been looking, how do I tweak it? Where do I tweak it? And that is also to say there was times when I didn't approach it that way. And I was like, I'm going to do the same thing over and over again. And I kept getting the same results. And eventually I was like, oh, change something. And I'm thankful I've been able to see that. But yeah, I'm down to try anything. I'm always looking for the next thing that's going to help me get a little bit better. And especially as you get older, like just as a professional athlete, you got to do so many things right and really focus on the details. Sweat the details. It sounds cliched, but it's true. Like, and I wish I would have done that as a younger professional, truly, because you feel good, you do the same thing. And then one day you wake up and you're like, I need to do a laundry list of things to be ready to go to practice today. At the end of the day, like if you do them, you're able to continue to play at the level that you want to play and then some. So
I love that. It's great to hear about your growth and love for this sport, Kelly. Honestly, you're making me want to pick up the soccer ball again. However, we know that being a professional soccer player hasn't been just fun and laughter for you. There are structural challenges you've faced, including pay disparities between male and female soccer players, and you've been really vocal about the issue. So now we'd love to dive deeper into that. Here's some data.
Okay.
God. Let's go.
According to 2021 Major League Soccer data, the minimum salary for a male player in the United States in a senior team is around $81,000. On the other hand, the minimum salary for a female player in the National Women's Soccer League can be as low as $22,000. Yuck. The pay gap problem goes beyond the leagues and extends to the national teams. In 2018, the U.S. Women's National Team filed a lawsuit against the U.S. Soccer Federation denouncing a gender pay gap, which included women receiving smaller bonuses for winning than men. When did you first find out about the gender pay discrepancy? And how did you feel at that time?
I think that I knew about it as soon as I started playing professionally and even before then. But to be honest, in the beginning of my professional career, I was happy to just be able to play. Like to me, it wasn't about money. It was just like, I get to do this as a job and get paid. It's great that I get paid, but I'm not that concerned about the money. And that was me being naive and also young and fresh out of college. So I think that as I became more experienced and did it for longer and started to hear things and also see things, you begin to realize how drastic it was and just that it was discriminatory, you know, that this isn't right. There's an issue here and we need to fix it and we need to be part of fixing it. And if we don't do that, no one else is going to do that. I think that's one of the biggest things that I've learned through my career with this specific issue is that you can complain all you want about something. You can, you know, talk about it till you're blue in the face. But if you're not willing to put in the time and the steps and the plan to say, how do we go from point A to point B? No one else is doing it for you. And so I think that is what I came to learn. And I'm thankful for that. And I think that's what has allowed us as national team players to finally take the step to take this to court and to make it have to hold up there. So yeah, it's been a journey, if you will.
Yeah. Strength in numbers though.
Yeah.
For sure.
You know, it's like when we stop commiserating and we start putting that plan together, there's incredible things that can happen from that.
Yeah. I actually was talking to somebody on the phone today and she said, I always tell people like, don't tell me the flood's coming or the flood's here. Like start building the ark, you know? And that hit me because it's applicable in so many areas of life. And I fully believe in that. And I think we all get sometimes caught up in talking about the flood as opposed to being like, how are we going to build the ark? And I do think there's power in the collective, there's strength in numbers for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, in your fight for equal pay, where have you seen the greatest change? Where are you, you know, where are you getting stuck in this issue?
We're definitely getting stuck on the dollars issue. I will say that if you follow the legal battle closely, we settled with U.S. Soccer on working conditions. So if the guys are flying charter every time they travel as a team and we're flying, I love Southwest, but like Southwest and have a layover, why is that happening? And we have gotten to a place where we do have equal working conditions and U.S. Soccer has agreed to that. So that issue has been sorted out, which is great. And there's certain things that have changed immensely in my career from when I started to now how we operate and some of the things that we're given and how we're taken care of. But again, that's only one piece of the puzzle in this legal battle.
And it took a lot to get there,
right? So there's some change.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
We appreciate it.
Constant fight for change. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
So I know that you mentioned, you know, the equal working conditions, that's where you're kind of seeing the change. But what about the salary? How does the salary budget and allocation money work in the NWSL? What are some obstacles that you're facing with the current compensation system?
Yeah. So what's interesting is that the way it's set up right now is the NWSL PA negotiates their CBA, USWNT PA negotiates our CBA. And the way our CBA is currently set up, and it's over, it expires at the end of this year. So we're actually currently in CBA negotiations, which it's no secret because US Soccer has talked about it publicly, said some things I've disagreed with. But the way it works is right now, national team players are allocated to a team and the national team is paying their salary while also paying for, you know, when we come in for games, that sort of thing. And there's a 16-man roster that is also paid a salary by US Soccer. So right now, if you're an allocated player in the league, you actually don't fall under the NWSL PA, which in my opinion, I personally would like to see it be separate. It would be you play for your NWSL team, you're paid by your NWSL team. You play for US Soccer, you're paid when you go in to US Soccer games, that sort of thing. But that's not how it is right now. So right now, I think we're in a very interesting place where we have the NWSL PA is negotiating their first CBA and we are negotiating a new CBA. And I think if we can find a place where one helps the other, I think that's best case scenario. But CBA negotiations are very difficult and we'll see if that happens. I'm hopeful. I'm always hopeful, even when it bites me in the ass.
Gotcha. All right. So let's flip it just a little bit. Another very important thing we want to talk about is, you know, we have a lot of major athletes that have sat out of international competitions to protest inequities. In your opinion, Kelly, what needs to be done to move the needle toward gender equality in soccer and in sports in general?
I think my biggest thing with gender inequity in sports is the coverage and the visibility. Mm. If that can change, I think it could do incredible things for women's sports. For instance, 4% of media coverage goes to women's sports.
Wow.
Which is why I got involved with Just Women's Sports. It's a digital media company that just covers women's sports. And I know how important visibility is and coverage.
Yeah. Exactly. So besides the pay, what are, you know, some other aspects that you hope to change to even the playing field for women and men soccer players?
Just the treatment of players and the professionalism that surrounds it, whether it's facilities, how we travel, just in general, like there's just a different level to professionalism that in my mind, some teams do it, which I think is great within the league, but others are just still so far behind. And I've been a part of both. And it feels really good to show up to work in the morning and feel like a professional athlete. Mm-hmm. And it changes how you're able to train and approach the game.
Yeah. The perseverance there is so key.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. So let's talk about college soccer players. Like, what would you recommend to college soccer players who are thinking of going pro?
Ooh. So the way college soccer is set up right now is they play their season in the fall, and then winter and spring is kind of like off / just really lifting and a little bit of training. But I would recommend that they put in the time and effort to prepare properly for what professional soccer will actually entail. Because I do think there's a big jump from college to the professional game in terms of time spent on the field, the level, the just having to take care of yourself and not being in a college environment, which most college athletes have a great setup. And it sometimes is a big drop off from college to professional sports in terms of what you're offered. I just remember when I was thinking about going pro or trying to get drafted, and my college coach, Paul Ratcliffe, called me and was like, "You're too small. You need to lift at least 3 times a week, be in the gym on your own. Like, you need to be working with the strength and conditioning coach and put in the time, because I want you to show up as prepared as possible to preseason with my to-be professional team." Committing yourself to it even more than you are as a student athlete. Student athlete, you've got school to attend to, but when you become a professional, like, this is your only job and you need to be ready to perform day in and day out. So there's a lot of variables that go into making sure you can do that.
When you say this is your only job and then the pay reflects that you should have 2 or 3 other ones.
I'm hearing that.
Yeah, it's true. It is true. Hopefully one day it can be the only thing you have to worry about. You don't worry about anything else, but yeah.
Do you have any advice for these athletes, whether, you know, any level, high school, college, pro, that are trying to advocate for positive changes in their teams and institutions like you're doing? How should they go about it?
I mean, a lot of it is, it's kind of like brainstorming and strategizing and figuring out what is possible and how can I be part of the solution as opposed to just talking about the problem.
Right? Yes, absolutely. I know anyone who's listening right now will feel so much empowerment to actually do that. Because sometimes we just need to hear it from
Hopefully,
someone we look up to.
And it's much easier said than done. And it takes a lot of effort and can be very difficult and at times very scary. But at the end of the day, you know, I don't think any great thing has come from like sitting on the sidelines and just hoping somebody else will do it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
So you're now the host of Just Women's Sports Podcast. Shout out to Just Women's Sports.
Yeah.
Could you tell me more about that project? You know, what have you learned from doing this project and your interviews with other female athletes?
Yeah, I have loved it. Nice. It's been incredible. I've gotten to talk to some amazing humans and athletes. And I want women's sports to have equal coverage, have the best coverage, you know, and to just go from where we are now to where I think that it's going to go. And part of that is the media coverage, is the visibility piece. And so when I got put in touch with the founder of JWS, Haley Rosen, who was also a Stanford soccer player, she was a little bit after my time, but I just kind of picked her brain and heard what she was thinking. And this was very much so when it was in its infancy and kind of still an idea, but she was starting to put the framework together. And one of the pieces she really wanted to go after was having a podcast and starting with one, but then, you know, bringing in more. And I love listening to podcasts. And she was like, "Well, do you want to host it?" And I said, "I don't know if you know this, but I've never hosted a podcast. I don't know why you'd offer me this because I don't know if I'm even good at it. But she eventually convinced me of it. And I'm really glad that I got the opportunity to kind of get in on the ground floor with her and JWS and be a part of building something. And they're already doing so well. And I think, you know, becoming a really big mover in the space of covering women's sports. And I'm glad that I got to be like, you know what? I know this is an issue. I know this is a problem. And I know mm-hmm. that if this, we need to improve this to get where I want to see women's sports be. And I was able to be like, yeah, I'm going to put skin in the game and like put in the work and the effort to be a part of this. So it's been great.
I love that.
Amazing.
So we can relate. Yeah. These conversations have been, I mean,
yes, I know. I'm like sweating. Relatable.
Yeah. Yeah. The conversations I've been able to have, like I always come away with just being like, man, that was so cool. Like I'm so inspired.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I'm like, there's no way this could be more interesting than the last or like different than the last. But then every athlete has such interesting perspectives, yes, yes. such different journeys. It's been awesome.
Love that.
Well, we're having a moment of that right now.
Yes. So.
Love it. Yeah.
Definitely. Well, Kelly, you're incredible. I mean, you're a professional soccer player, business owner, podcast host. I mean, list goes on. What strategies do you have to juggle several responsibilities while growing in your sport?
Oh my God. Sleep a lot. try to get enough sleep. Like, no, truly, like, here's the thing. I you got to take care of yourself if you want to do anything beyond what is just in your very small orbit or like your day to day, you know? And for me, taking care of myself is paramount in my career, in my job. Like, I'm a professional athlete. My body should be a temple. Sometimes it's not, but it typically is. And like, this is what does the work. But on top of that, in general, like if you don't take care of yourself, you're not gonna be able to take care of anyone else. So I think that for me, I'll say, I make sure that I sleep, eat well, drink enough water, and try to be able to juggle all these things, schedule accordingly. But then I also feel like I do a good job of when I need the time, space, and like to recover and decompress, like I set boundaries and I'm just like, mm-hmm. I'm not available. Like I can't do this. I say no. So I think that saying no is sometimes just as great as saying yes a lot of times.
Oh, I love that.
Listen, we just put basic needs at the forefront. You were hearing this from a
professional. Yeah, and it's true.
Like, yes.
Fam. All right, Kelly, what's next for you in your career? You have any upcoming projects or games that you'd like to share with our listeners?
So currently playing with the Washington Spirit in DC. If you are a DC local like Mon is, you come out to a game. And if you do, say hi. We're closing out our season, so we're coming up on playoffs, which it's a very tight table right now, and we are trying to claw our way with enough points into that. So to be able to be in the NWSL playoffs, which will take place in November. We have two games coming up with the national team in the middle of October, which will be fun. And then, yeah, I'm looking forward to December. That's my off time. Maybe do a little vacation, a little travel. But like you said, things never stop. So I'm constantly on the move doing things, but also trying to get enough sleep at night. So that's what's on the horizon
priorities.
For me.
Big takeaway. Yes.
Yeah.
Love it. Under Armour Sweat the Details will be back after a short break.
Welcome back to Sweat the Details. I think it's time we play a little game. How about that?
Oh, I love games.
Yeah. So this is a part of the show we love to just ask our guests some fun, like rapid fire questions. So for today's game, we're playing Goal.
I'm stretching now. I'm just going to get ready.
I was trying not to like yell into the mic. Goal.
Is this like a, okay. All right.
Okay. So it's just going to be like based on things related to your passion for soccer and game day routines. So we're just going to ask you a question and then you just kind of answer first thing that comes to mind. We may have like a question of why your answer was that.
Perfect. I can do that.
Pre-game ritual.
Pre-game ritual. I have a whole stretching routine that I go to and then activation routine. So pretty much that. And then whoever's DJ is bumping tunes and that always gets me in a good headspace. And I usually meditate as well, either on the way to the game or, which is like if you're busing or at the stadium, when I get into the locker room, I'll meditate, which like for 5-10 minutes max. But I like to just, I have enough energy, and I get amped well beyond what I need to be. So for me, it's like bringing it back, bringing the folks back. Yeah, yeah. Like calming down a little bit so that I'm just super focused and calm and just like ready to go.
I love how like different all of us are. Like I'm definitely different. I'm like, I have nervous energy, but I need craziness beforehand.
Really?
I don't know. Like I have to, because if I like slow down, it's too much. Like, I don't know. I get in the head.
Yeah. I used to be that way for sure. When I was younger, I was like, like, let's go. But no, I'm way more chill now.
See, I probably need to tune it down a bit. Maybe that's where I'm like, that's the miss. I'm writing that down now.
I found that when I was like so amped, I was more tense and like muscularly, mm-hmm. it just didn't work out. Like I would like tweak things. So it was just like, oh, like, let's go. Like, I'm so nervous. Yeah. And I'm so excited.
Yep.
Way more chill, calm, collected.
Definitely chill vibes.
I'm going to try that next time. Yes. Chill vibes are all around. All right.
Yes.
Favorite goal that you've ever scored?
Ooh. I scored in the semifinal of the 2015 World Cup, and that was pretty sick. And I think it was my first goal with the national team, which was kind of funny. But yeah, that was probably the like biggest goal I've ever scored for sure.
What was the setup?
What made it so special? Yeah, I need to know.
We were winning 1-0 against Germany. I think it was probably like the 79th or 83rd minute, something like that, very late in the game. I'd subbed on not even 5 minutes earlier. And Jill Ellis, our coach at the time, was like, "You're going in there, you're going to defend." And I was like, "Yes, ma'am." And then I found myself in the box because I was playing winger. And we like had a play where Abby got the ball, played it to Kling. Kling played it to Carly. Carly got end line and like just put it across the goal. And I just like almost like karate kicked it into the goal, which is, God, I think, what beautiful. People called it. And it was just, it was insane. Because that goal made it be like, okay, we're going to the World Cup final again.
Oh my gosh. Listen,
that ball comes, you got to put something
And everyone's
on
like, oh my God. Everyone's like, how did Kelly just score? Yeah, like what? Kelly never scores, and like literally never scores. So
karate kicks for the win.
Yes.
All right. Best way to celebrate a win.
I mean, a beer's nice post game. I feel like I used to do that more in my 20s. Now I'm like, water's fine. But honestly,
bubbles
just
are
like,
too much.
Relax. Yeah. Just, I mean, I'm down for like pizza and chill, and depends on how big the win is. Like, I'm thinking just week in, week out with the league. Honestly, to me, in season, we win and I'm like, I'm already thinking about next week. How can I recover? How can I be ready for practice this week? That sort of thing. So, but if it's a big win, like a World Cup or an Olympics, like it's get the champagne out, the beer, and let's party.
So it depends on the win.
On the type of win. For sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Definitely. Makes sense. Awesome. Yeah. All right. Last one. Favorite soccer player growing up?
My favorite soccer player growing up was probably Julie Foudy. Nice. She was a winger, and because I actually didn't really know much about Stanford growing up, but like I knew that she was smart or like had gone to a good school. And so, and I was as a kid really big and I was like into school and cared about that sort of thing. So I was like, oh, like be like her, you know, good at soccer, but also smart. So yeah, probably Julie Foudy.
Beautiful. I love that.
Yeah.
All right. You've survived our
so
game.
Happy right now.
It's been really nice. I've enjoyed
it. Has been really nice.
I know,
It's refreshing.
Yes.
You are incredible in all forms. We're so thankful to have had this conversation with you, Kelly. Thank you.
Seriously.
That's very kind. Well, I've really enjoyed it. So thank you guys for having me.
Yes. Can you share a little bit about where everyone can find you online?
Yeah. I'm on the gram, Kelly O'Hara. I am on Twitter. I don't think I've opened Twitter in literally months. So maybe don't go there. And then I host Just Women Sports podcast. So go follow Just Women Sports and go download some of the podcasts and listen to them because they're some great conversations.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Kelly. This has been such a great conversation and hopefully we'll get to chat again soon.
Definitely. Thank you guys. I appreciate it.
Meg, my mind is blown right now talking to Kelly about all things, one, her greatness on the field, and two, being a pioneer for equal pay in professional sports in general for women is a job in and of itself. Mm-hmm. So I'm just thinking about the moments where she talked about even going into court and that kind of mental battle, emotional battle, and her ability to still be growing and grinding it out and continuing the conversation. I'm so mm-hmm. thankful to be able to have shared that energy with her.
Yeah, I feel fired up. Like, you know, as a woman, you know that this is probably an issue across sports everywhere, but to hear firsthand, it's very frustrating. It just seems like every conversation that we've had, I just realize more and more just how different, you know, women's sports are treated and valued. And I'm so incredibly thankful for women like Kelly who are constantly fighting the system, demanding equal rights. It's so inspiring and will hopefully encourage, you know, younger generations to recognize their own worth and shoot for goals that, you know, they may have never seen as possible. If only we had another few hours to chat. I want to keep on chatting with her. Kelly is, she's such a phenomenal woman.
She said earlier that, you know, it was a very passion over pay situation when she, you know, just got into professional sports. And I feel that on the greatest level. Like, I'm just happy to be here turns into now I literally can't even afford to be here. And that's painful. Mm-hmm. You know, we think about it from a level of like women in corporate America or just in any situation of work. But then it goes into, I am using my body day in and day out, you know, sacrificing my safety to put on the best and most entertaining show for the fans and the people who are truly passionate. And I'm seeing very, very little for it. And it's like, you know, what do I have left after that? So, you know, my heart goes out to women in professional sports who are feeling that same struggle that many of us do in our everyday lives.
Yeah. You know, and she also spoke about coverage and visibility and how that definitely needs improvement. What did she say? 4%?
4%
of media coverage goes to women's sports. Like, are you kidding me? They're not covering, they're not giving visibility to women. So they just assume, okay, well, they don't have this coverage, so they don't deserve equal pay. And it's just absurd to me. It's completely outrageous. And I'm so glad that she's out there fighting. And hopefully other people are getting encouraged now. You know, it could be you're in high school or you're in college. Maybe you're not at that pro level, but look at your organization around you and be more aware. What is happening around you? Are you just being complacent to what it is? Or is there something that I could do? Could I speak up? Could I team up with a teammate and use our voice?
Yeah, it's rough, but I know that this conversation and the ones that we continue to have and continue to put women on a platform that can really reach more women mm-hmm. and even the men that are supportive in that way is definitely going to be a game changer. So I'm so happy for that conversation. On the other hand, what are you working on over there? I want to hear about your goals moving into this week. In this portion, y'all, we talk about our goals and do check-ins on where we are with them and, you know, just try to speak on how we can continue to support one another. So Meg, what you got going on?
Well, I am on my last day of recovery today. I've been doing a lot of stretching, some mobility stuff in the garage, nothing where I'm like lifting weight, just because I'm telling you, like I could barely walk up my stairs. But now that I've stretched and I've kind of slowly started getting back into it, I think tomorrow I'm going to get under the bar and we're going to see what happens this week. I'm excited. I think I'm going to focus on deadlift and bench press as I get back into things first. Because those are obviously my favorite.
Love it.
That's about where I am right now. And I've had some people, thank you to everyone who has sent me a DM and been very encouraging since I was kind of like not online very much. And I did get some really sweet messages that were telling me that they were just wanted to check in and see how I was doing. And they were so proud of me, you know, and Under Armour. And they just felt so happy and excited for the representation. And so that kind of got me pumped up. That's kind of where I am now. And
Yeah. I mean, I was talking to my coach about you today. It was my first session back in the gym since our shoot. And I was like, Meg was in here throwing that weight around like it was pillows. And I still amped up from it. So good job to you, Meg, because recovery is just as important. Just like Kelly was saying, it's freaking amazing.
Yes.
I've just gotten through. I can't believe I'm saying this. I just got through the best and most manageable period I've ever had in my life. And
I understand that.
It's been over a year of working on, you know, syncing my cycle and doing the hard work of trying to sit down when I need to, doing more recovery than work, doing the right kind of work for the right phase. And it feels so good to be there. And now I just want to get back into this phase of putting in the right kind of work. I am a month out from my fight. And this month, I want to pick up the skill and the tenacity and the heart that it takes. And that doesn't require for me to necessarily do more. It requires for me to, you know, in the moment, be more and stay focused. So thank you to everyone who is also, that grows more and more meaningful to me as I get older, is, you know, being more in the moment and creating and engaging in quality moments, quality sessions, quality sets, over feeling like I need to do all of the sets just for the sake of doing it because it's expected. Yeah. So thank you to you, Meg, and to everybody else who has been out here cheering me on. Those of you, you know, really supporting me and my hopes to get closer with those who have been affected by cancer and, you know, really trying to bring my best fight forward. It's meant the world to me. And shout out to the Sweat the Details behind the scenes production staff, Team UA. Y'all have given us life the last week. Cannot say it enough. Being a part of this team is absolutely a blessing. It's been so incredible. So y'all keep up with us.
So many happy tears.
Keep up with all of us because we are living our best life together and we want you on this vibe.
Absolutely. Well, that's it for this week's episode, but don't forget to join us next week when we talk about goals and benchmarks and how we can set ourselves up for success with creating realistic objectives for our training.
All of that. Thank you for joining us, Fit Fam. If you liked what you heard on the show, subscribe for free or follow the show on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen. And don't forget to leave that 5-star rating and review.
Please do. 5-star, 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 you guys. Until next time, stay inspired, stay motivated, and remember to always sweat the details.
Bye.
Bye. If you liked what you heard on the show, subscribe for free or follow the show on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen. And don't forget to leave a 5-star rating and review.
Sweat the Details is a collaboration with Under Armour and iHeartRadio. Our show is hosted by me, Monica Jones.
And me, Meg Boggs. Our executive producers are Jess Schreibstein, Giselle Lewis-Archbold, Molly Socha, and Maya Cole.
Our producers are Kelly Antol, Layla Kadrain, Emma Osborne, and Alejandra Arevalo.
And our sound editor and engineer is Sarah Gibble-Laska.
Keep up with the latest news in women's fitness by following Under Armour at Under Armour Women and at Under Armour.